Telling Tampa Bay Stories. Members of the community share their stories of growing up in some now forgotten neighborhoods. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Telling Tampa Bay Stories is a new project from WUSF News where our journalists will be visiting some of the region's lesser-known spots to record stories from members of those communities. Recently, we met with some residents at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg to hear their stories of growing up. On today's show, we'll bring you some of those stories recorded by WUSF News staff and University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students enrolled in the Neighborhood News Bureau course. Their coursework focuses on telling stories from the African-American community in South St. Petersburg known as Midtown. As you'll hear on today's show, people who have spent their lives in Midtown have witnessed quite a few changes over the years for themselves, their families, and their community. We began with a look at the changes in St. Petersburg as seen through the eyes of a real estate broker.
I'm Lou Brown, Louis D. Brown, Jr. I go by the name of Lou, a realtor here in St. Petersburg. I was born in St. Petersburg at Mercy Hospital. I was born in 56, went to elementary school here. They desegregated and when I went to high school. Interesting time. Got through that, went to Howard University, graduated. Met the wife, moved back. Been a realtor. I got my real estate license when I was still in Washington and sold real estate there before I came home. The area on this side of Lake Magori was populated just about the very early 70s. Hopped over to Lake Magori and went to the Lakewood Estates, and it was naturally desegregating and got to Pinellas Point. I've always considered those areas, some areas in Lakewood and Pinellas Point, as passing what I call the litmus test of desegregation, because it's really more desegregated. Actually, it's really more integrated than desegregated. And my rule on that is if a white family will buy from a black family. Because, of course, you had a lot of what they used to call the white flight when the black families were moving in, and what it was. Black families would move in, the white families would move out. And a lot of realtors made a lot of money the wrong way, blockbusting and steering and, you know, hey, well, look, hey, these people are coming. You got to sell your house, list it with me, I'll sell it. And then, okay, come here, you can buy this house. And, you know, kind of work both sides of the street until basically white folks realize, wait, we can't get away. You know, as long as they can qualify and they can move in, they'll move in wherever they want. So it doesn't make sense for me to leave what I've got and go to Seminole or whatever. It sort of began to naturally desegregate. So there are areas now, Pinellas Point, Lakewood, that we consider very good areas where anybody can go in and buy. And to me, that's the litmus test, because at first, white families generally would not buy from a black family. And to the point where the real estate agents would come in and say, oh, take down all your ethnic art or whatever, and I consider that an insult. You know, what do you mean? If that's it, if I'm living here, that's it. You know, they're looking at the house, they're not looking at my pictures anyway. But that was how it started, and we still have a long way to go. But you know, you have to learn little things that you can't really be insensitive like that and what it is. But the bottom line is, you know, we're not trying to be social engineers. We're trying to make money. And we're trying to serve the public and do what we need so that we can use our expertise and skill to help you get a house or to help you sell your house, and we can move forward from there. The very early 80s, the country was still going through some serious racial growing. And, you know, we went through a lot of things where people did understand. They would figure it out, or we would have a lot of kumbaya moments and, you know, holding hands and getting to understand, right on through to the people who really had some serious racial issues, and it was very difficult to work with those. Sometimes you'd get to people and, okay, you could get beyond that and you'd help them learn or whatever, and it's amazing how some of the battles that we were fighting in the 80s we're still fighting now with getting people to understand. It helped me a lot because very early on it wasn't any difficulty knowing who Lou Brown was, because I was just about the only black person in the room. And you learn to go through that, and that's not the worst thing in the world. And you let people know, hey, I'm human too. These are the things I like. Or like I used to say in the neighborhoods, when the black folks would move in and white folks would be there, then they'd find out, hey, wait a minute, this guy, he likes the Bucks. I like the Bucks, okay? Or he disciplines his kids the same way I discipline mine. They're normal, everyday people too. And then friendships would develop. and it would get beyond race. And that is really the only way. I always say that, you know, it's just that personal one-on-one, you know, communication that will get beyond some of the racial problems. And the other thing I often say is economics will trump racism every time.
Lou Brown is a real estate broker in St. Petersburg. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Tracy Karp and WUSF's Daylena Miller.
My name is Winnie Foster. I have been a grassroots community organizer since my husband and I moved here from Providence, Rhode Island in 1970. I brought a picture of the people who were the staff and the family of the first black judge elected in Pinellas County. He was running for county judge, and I had been organizing against the Vietnam War and had a collection of contacts, and I had known about Jim Sanderlin because he had arrived here from Boston as a young lawyer in support of the sanitation workers' strike, and he helped them picket and finally sue in order to get, they won and got higher wages and better working conditions. And after that, Jim Sanderlin was a lawyer for the courageous police officers that you often see mentioned, who sued the city for the right to be treated like any other officer. When they started their contest with the city, they were only allowed to patrol in the black community and could not were not supposed to challenge or arrest a white citizen. So they won that case. And then after that was when he decided to run for judge. And I got a phone call that said, would you come and join his campaign and bring your shoebox? The shoebox was contained the 3x5 cards that I had accumulated organizing against the Vietnam War. And so I brought my shoebox, but people told me, oh, forget it, you're never going to be able to elect a black judge in Pinellas County. But we had a very good strategy, and it was dressing up like a blonde bomb and going, wearing eye makeup and my PTA clothes and going up to the white communities in North County and telling them what a wonderful young man had come down to St. Petersburg from Harvard, and he was energetic and we would do well to elect him as judge. So I spoke to Republican groups and homeowners associations and that sort of thing. And part of our strategy was to have two different flyers, one of which I carried to North County and handed out, which had no picture on it. And the other one was widely distributed in South County and did have his picture. We never make change unless we work at it. We worked it energetically and well and had some very good people who were committed to change, and so we did win that first election.
Winnie Foster was part of a campaign that helped elect the first black judge in Pinellas County in 1972. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Samantha Sotos and WUSF's Daylena Miller.
My name is Michael Blue. I'm 31 years old. I grew up on the south side of St. Petersburg. We moved to several different locations, but the main location we've been in has been at 31st Street, the house at 31st Street South. So that's where I spent the majority of my childhood. I've recently moved back after being gone, more or less 10 years in Tallahassee. I bought into a owner-operator vending machine business recently, and we had to fly out to Idaho Falls for owner-operator training. There were 10 of us in the class. Now, one of the reasons I actually got into the business as quickly as I did was because after I reviewed it, I felt like it was something that had to be jumped on quick before other people caught sight of it, basically caught wind of it. It kind of works like a traditional vending machine. What makes it a healthy alternative is basically the way it's designed, the way it's packaged, and the technology that comes with it allows the customer to view nutritional information of everything in the machine before they actually make a purchase. It just so happens in this 10-person class, two of us were from St. Petersburg, Florida. I was from the South Side. And there was another young lady, a white young lady, who lived on the north side, closer to Clearwater. When I told her I was from the south side of St. Petersburg, I kind of got this face, you know? And it was like, you know, calm down. Everybody that lives on the south side of St. Petersburg doesn't necessarily hold to that reputation. So I kind of think that reaction has remained constant even though I've been gone for 10 years. I can't say it bothers me because it's been happening for so long. Like even when I went to college and, you know, I went to Florida State University and you tell people, you know, I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida. I heard about St. Pete. Y'all kind of wild down there. I was like, well, kind of, you know, it's actually only really more or less a certain area. You know, it's not the entire South Side because, you know, if you know anything about St. Pete, the further you get into the South Side, the nicer it gets. So, you know, I kind of live in the deeper part of the South Side where it's a little nicer, or less rowdier, you know, than what people see on TV, see in the news. So I can't say now it makes me feel anyway. I kind of understand why people have that reaction. It's kind of media influence more so than their own personal experience. So, you know, I just kind of take it for what it is. Every now and then I'll get the opportunity to show people the entire South Side. Is it what you think it is? I don't mind it, actually. You know, it's kind of like I could prove you wrong, you know. It's a lot of personal life choices. Just a personal belief. First of all, as far as myself, when it came to myself, I've always wanted to be in business for myself. And I've kind of always had that entrepreneurial spirit, mindset. I do have to carry myself maybe slightly more cautiously than someone else might have to. And I've been taught that for so long, it doesn't necessarily bother me anymore. I don't know if that's a problem or not, but it's been taught that for so long, it doesn't necessarily bother me to have to do that. So as far as it being a challenge, it's always been there. So it's, you know, if it's a challenge now and I ain't got over it yet, it's I'm never gonna get over it.
That was Michael Blue, who has recently moved back to St. Petersburg. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Esteban Rodriguez and WUSS Mary Shedden. Coming up,
22nd Street South, I would compare with any block of any big city during that time.
More stories recorded at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. We're telling Tampa Bay stories with a focus this week on Midtown, an area in South St. Petersburg. We continue now with more stories recorded by University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students and WUSF news staff at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum. As a child, Thomas Jets Jackson says he used to be a little on the mischievous side. Mostly, he would break into swimming pools. Jackson tells us how eventually adults noticed how he longed to be in the pool and opened the door for him to join the swim team.
I'm Thomas James Jackson Jr., better known as Jet to most folks. Nobody seems to know who Thomas is, but everybody knows who Jet is. That's with one T, by the way. I was born June 14th, 1943. I grew up in St. Petersburg. Wasn't a bad football player, a Gibbs basketball player either. I was captain and all that kind of stuff. And that's how I got my name, Jet. One day, playing baseball, and I was running the bases, and Coach Johnson said, come on around, Jet. That's how I got the name, Jet. And it's been with me all ever since. So many people kind of turned me around to make me a better person. In the swimming program, under where I used to be a little thug, breaking into the pool and slipping in and doing stuff like that. Especially when they had things like the pageant. They don't have pool pageants anymore. They just had them pool pageants, swim meets and things like that. And I would sneak in them just to see. They had the diving competition. When I was a little kid, I would do that just to get in and see. And I wanted to do those things so bad. You know, and so eventually I did over a period of time because of the care that someone had concern for me. And you know, and that's a good reason why I think I give back so much, because those folks didn't have to, you know, take me up in a part, to put me in a part of their lives. You know, he's a little bad boy, and people had that just that much concern for me. All those folks are gone now, but I remember how they took me in, you know, as a kid. And a lady by the name of Beatrice Monroe and Mr. Ernest Filio decided to let me in the pool. You know, I had to work for little things like sweep out the bathroom and stuff like that to earn some of that stuff. Then I joined the swim team. Mr. Filio taught me how to swim, put me on the swim team. I was one of the youngest guys on the swim team. The team name back then was the Barracudas, the Wildwood Barracudas. And we swam all over the state of Florida. Back then, you know, segregation. So basically, we swam West Palm Beach, Boynton Beach, Jacksonville, Tampa, Clearwater, different pools like that. And I learned a lot. You know, I think it had to be an angel watching over me, because I didn't go to jail or anything like that. I was just bad. You know, I call them now mischievous children when they're bad. You know, so I kind of understand them a whole lot these days. But I'm not with the kids anymore, but I miss them. I really miss them, especially those teenagers that I had for almost 15 years. They named the recreation center after me, which is known as the Thomas Jet Jackson Wild Recreation Center. The name was Wildwood Recreation Center, which I ran for about maybe 19 years. So some people thought it would be better that they name it after me, after the contribution I made in the community. I feel good, but I'm not dead. You know, the record says the person has to be dead in order to receive these type of accolades, but I'm still alive, and I really do appreciate it. I really do. I really do. I think it's an honor for them to consider me. You know, I didn't ask for it. Some people thought I deserved it, so I appreciate it. My life has been fun. I've enjoyed every bit of it.
That was Thomas Jet Jackson. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Sarah Mason and WUSF's Lisa Peaks. We now go to Jeanette Brights. She's worked as a victim advocate for more than three decades.
My name is Jeanette Bright, and I live in Clearwater, Florida now. But I was born in 592 Jordan Park, and that would be apartment number 592, way back in 1959. A lot of times people would say that nothing good comes out of Jordan Park, and I think that's a lie, because there's good things that came out of Jordan Park. I'd consider myself being one of those good things, not to pat myself on the back, but I think that all things that God made are good. So there's a purpose for everybody and everything. As a child, the neighbors helped to raise us. We didn't curse them out. We respected what they said. They were an extension of our parents. And what our parents said went, and so did what the neighbors did. I think we need to get back to basics, because as I look around these children that's over to the side of me, our generations have been cheated. I've seen racism. I've seen a lot of unfairness. I've seen young people dying that shouldn't have died. I've seen people, parents, that are gone on that were pretty young, and they shouldn't have died as early as they should have either. I know that God is in charge and in control of all things, but there are some things that we as people do that kind of rushes that up, in a sense. And we need to have more hope. I want these children to be able to see better than what they're seeing. The time that we're living in with the first black president of the United States, they have treated him with such disrespect. And I do not want children to think that this is not something that they can attain, because it is attainable. To show someone how to do it right. Not to say that it was all done wrong, but give somebody else a chance to make a difference. Although we may be different on the outside, we're all the same on the inside. God made us the same. Just the covering is different. But we all hurt the same, we all cry the same, and we can all smile the same. So why can't we be treated the same? When people start treating people like they want to be treated, things will change. And until we have a true dialogue about racism in this country, it'll never change. Because if you don't take something out by the root, it will continue to grow. You can chop the head off of it every day if you had to with a weed, but it will continue to grow unless you pull it out by the root. Then you will get it to stop. And that's all I can say. But I am being very honest and very upfront, because these are some things that are really, really serious to me. And having a son in college, I have tried, and my husband has tried, to teach him to treat people the way he wants to be treated. And he may not get that always. Respect begets respect. So when we start respecting each other and understanding that we're really all the same, we can go farther. We can go a lot farther.
That was Jeanette Brights of Clearwater. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Daria Perisic and WUSF's Lisa Peaks.
My name is Edgar Wilcox, even though I was not originally born in St. Petersburg, but I grew up in the city. I went to Jordan Elementary School, and I grew up in the famous Jordan Park Project. Yeah. And that was a unique experience when I look back on it. During my time, 22nd Street South was, I would compare it with any block of any big city during that time. They had all clubs, pool hall, restaurants. And one fascinating thing for me when I was a youngster, the Manhattan Casino, was the center spot for all the black entertainment that came to the city. And even though I couldn't go, I was a minor, I would sneak out the house and go up there. And I had a couple of hooligan friends who did the same thing. We talked about it the previous day, what we was gonna do. Sometimes you get on top of the roof of the Snow Peak building and peep through the windows. You could only see heads mostly, you know. But for a youngster, it was a lot of excitement, you know. I enjoyed that. That was an experience for me. I played basketball and football for 16th Street and Gibbs. And I went to school to Florida A&M for a year and a half. Yeah. On a football scholarship, I didn't do well. I was chasing the football and basketball so hard till I didn't miss too much. You know what I mean? I was serious about what I was doing, you know. Only thing I didn't do well, I should have did better in my grades. I would have stayed, you know, but I was into the ball. That was my passion, you know. And I stood a good chance. I felt like I stood a good chance of making it. I just, when I look back, I wasn't disciplined, you know, enough to handle it, you know. It's a challenge when you go off on your own, you know, away from home. Nobody that really chastised and said, don't do this and don't do that. You know, you're on your own. You know? I did a year in Vietnam. The military kind of take care of me now for that experience. I had a little problems, but I'm doing okay now. They say I'm cured, and, you know. But I served in the Vietnam War. That was a unique experience, you know, for me. And I hope nobody ever have to go to war. You know, that's not a good thing. Even if you're looking at it, you know, just looking at it, it's not a good thing. I had a great appreciation for life. The witness, what I witnessed, it makes you appreciate life better. And I tried to change myself for the better, you know. I kind of found myself. I never got me a trade that I wanted to get, but I found myself. I was a driver, a truck driver. I had a CDLB license, commercial license. I drove bus, but that was most of my profession I drove. And now that I'm into music, I feel like that should sustain me for the trade, you know, because I read the music and I think I'm a good, real good performer. I just need the opportunity to be seen. And, you know, it's something I really, really enjoy doing. So it's not like a real job. You know what I mean? You know, it's like I was going to do it anyway, but I love it. Most of the music I do was inspired by love. You know what I mean? So, you know, this is the way it is.
Edgar Wilcox is an aspiring jazz singer from St. Petersburg. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Tracy Karp and WUSF's Mary Shedden. That's it for today's show. We have more stories online at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link. Stories were recorded by University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students enrolled in the Neighborhood News Bureau course with assistance from WUSF's Daylena Miller, Lisa Peaks, Mary Shedden, and Lottie Watts. Special thanks to Neighborhood News Bureau professor Bernardo Mata and the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg, where stories for today's show were recorded. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts, engineered by Craig George, and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.